spoke of Andy. Keep an eye on my son, Bounty Hunter. Don't leave him alone with that girl for a second. His safety is of the utmost importance.
Dex nodded again.
As you wish, General.
I don't need to remind you, the General added, leaning closer to the camera, of your fate should you fail to deliver him safely back to me.
I remember quite well.
Very good.
General Cortas lifted a hand to hover near the screen.
Don't signal me again on this line. I don't want Zenterra picking up on any transmissions.
Don't you want to see him before you go?
Dex offered. The General froze, his eyes taking on a strange haze.
I'll see him when he's safely home. Remember who you are, Arez. Remember that you're nothing without me.
With that, he tapped the screen. It faded to darkness. Dex took a moment to gather himself. Then he rose, remembering Androma's promise to him back in Lunamere. His heart in his throat, he slipped back out into the halls of the Marauder, walked the familiar path to his old quarters, and stopped before the closed door. Classical music spilled out from inside. He sighed as he imagined her in there, alone, facing the ghosts of every man and woman she'd killed over the past several days. He knocked. He knew she wouldn't answer, even if the music hadn't drowned out the sound. But it was now or never, he supposed. With a deep breath, Dex opened the door of the captain's quarters and slipped inside.
Chapter 35 Androma. The dead were watching her dance. Andy closed her eyes tighter, willing them away, though she sat in the darkness of her captain's quarters on the Marauder, classical music blaring over the loudspeakers. Her mind and her body were light-years away. Arcardius, a planet adorned with glass that she had once called home. She spun on the stage of the Academy, the domed ceiling overhead speckled with lights in the shape of Arcardian bursting stars. The seats that overlooked the stage were filled, though not with the living. They were filled with the dead. Her victims watched as Andy took the stage. As the music began, gentle at first, the tinkle of bells, then a great swell of cymbals, and she took flight. Her body was a vessel, a conduit through which she allowed the music to move. Her arms extended, her toes rose to a point, and she spun, round and round, a planet in orbit. When she opened her eyes, she saw the first man rise from his seat. Blood pooled from a slit across his throat, red like a smile, staining the Arcardian patrolman badge on his chest. "I'm sorry," Andy said. "I'm so sorry." He didn't speak. The dead never did, and so she extended her hand to him. He took it in his feather-like grip, and together they danced. Round and round they spun, gliding across the stage as weightless as two ghosts in the night. As they danced, Andy forced herself to look at him. Through the blood, through the mask of horror that he'd held in his final moments as he died by her swords, she saw the man she'd murdered. He was a human being, a man who had lived and breathed and loved and hated, a man she'd killed in cold blood. She'd done it because he would have done the same to her, because if she hadn't, she would have died. As they danced, she forced herself to look at every detail of his face, the wrinkles at the corners of his eyes, the way his skin was tanned, as if he'd recently spent time outdoors beneath the blazing sun, a soldier training for a mission he knew was soon to come. He couldn't have known he would die by the hand of the bloody Baroness on board the Marauder as his borrowed commander, a bounty hunter with eyes that pierced, urged him to take his enemy down. Tears streaked down Andy's cheeks, pulling her from the vision she'd created so clearly in her mind. The music grew louder, silencing her tears. She closed her eyes and forced herself back into her mind. She owed this to the dead, this pain, this dance, this time where she gave herself fully to their memory. The next corpse stepped onto the stage. This one was a woman, a guard she'd silenced in Lunamere. As they joined hands and spun in time with the sorrowful strings, Andy saw that the woman was young. She had tired eyes in a thin face, as if she hadn't slept, hadn't had a full meal in days. "I'm so sorry," Andy said to her. The woman simply danced on and on until her form faded like mist. Another of the dead took her place. They danced, cold palms pressed to Andy's warm ones, bodies intertwining like vines that twisted together and then came apart. Andy danced until she'd remembered them all, every last person she'd killed, every beating heart she'd stopped too soon. It didn't matter that they were her enemies. It didn't matter that in those final moments, Andy had allowed herself to make a choice, to cross the line she'd drawn for herself, deal out death to another or die. She danced in her mind until her tears had run dry. She danced until the audience was nearly empty, until the lights of the stage had begun to grow dim, as if the stars overhead were falling into a restful sleep. Only a single form remained in the audience now. Andy turned to face her as the figure stood. She was dressed in a shimmering blue gown that swirled around her ankles like fragments of cloud. It had always been her favorite, had made her smile and feel, for a time, like a queen. Her pale hair, matted to her skull on one side, had turned red from fresh blood. Her eyes were closed as she stood at the base of the stage, unmoving. Every time, no matter the dance, no matter how many deaths Andy had to remember, this girl appeared. "Kaylee," Andy said, "wake up." The girl did not move, did not open her eyes. Andy tried to reach her, but the stage had morphed into something smaller, the space tightening, the walls closing in until she was seated in the captain's chair of a transport ship, fire blazing, smoke clouding her lungs. "Wake up!" Andy screamed. The transport creaked, groaned as the fire licked closer and closer. Heat had begun to bloom across Andy's wrists, pain that throbbed and screamed and begged for her attention, but she could not give it, because Kaylee was dead. Tears pooled in Andy's vision, and she reached out a final time, desperate to save her charge. Something touched her from behind. She slipped from the vision like water through fingertips, and turned around to see him standing there, bathed in the starlight that glowed through the glass wall of Andy's quarters. "You promised me a conversation," Dex said. She could scarcely hear him over the music still playing, over the echo of her own screams still haunting her from her vision. Wet tears still streaming down her cheeks, Andy nodded. Dex sat beside her on the floor of her quarters. "Whenever you're ready," he said. He knew her routine. She had done it since the very first night they'd shared together. Different places, different times, but the motions were always the same. Wrapped up in the music, they sat until the song ended. Silence swept over them, thick and uncomfortable and still, but familiar, like a long unseen friend returning home. "Go ahead, Dex," Andy said. Chapter 36 Androma. "Dancing with the dead again?" Dex asked. "Some habits aren't meant to change," Andy said. She turned to face him. Alone in her private quarters, his presence felt too large, too real after all they'd just shared in Lunamare. Old memories of the two of them, once lovers who had shared this very room, began to take shape. "I love you, Androma," Dex had said. He'd picked her up, carried her to the small cot in the corner of the room. In between kisses, he'd looked at her like she was sunlight in the darkness. 3 days later, he'd sold her to the patrolman for her crimes. Andy silenced her mind. She would not allow the memories in. Not now, when she already felt so weak. Dex had showered, finally, the dried blood and vomit washed away, the collar of his shirt opened to reveal the scar she'd once given him. The bruise from Soyina's stun gun had darkened on his forehead. Even now, the one on her chest throbbed. "I still can't believe she shot us," Dex said, noticing Andy's stare. He placed a hand to his bruise and winced. He swallowed and looked at her directly. When I saw you in that pile of bodies, Andy..." "I promised you 5 minutes," Andy said, cutting him off. "You said you wanted to talk about the past. Let's talk about it." His lips parted slightly. Then he closed them and looked away, hesitating before he spoke. I've run through this conversation in my mind a million times, and now that we're actually together, I'm not sure where to begin. How about this? Andy asked. The weakness from her dancing visions, the pain of facing her ghosts, suddenly faded. Acid took its place. You betrayed me, she said. She got to her feet, suddenly unable to sit still. You knew I was facing a death sentence back on Arcadius. You left me in the hands of those who would give me that death, all for a few crevs. The words were out. She'd told the girls about the horrific fate Dex had left her to, but never, in the years they'd spent apart, had she imagined seeing him alive and saying it to his face. It was so absurd, and he was so silent that she threw her head back and laughed. He flinched as if she'd hit him. Oh, Dextro, Andy said, stepping closer to him as he got to his feet. Don't tell me you thought, just because we managed to do a job together without killing each other, that I'd forgiven you? Let me remind you that this job wasn't my choice. I took it only because you forced me to, by teaming up with that devil of a man. If you only knew the full story, Dex began, but Andy didn't want to listen. She was so angry, but hidden behind that rage was pure pain. It was so raw it made her want to burst. Had he ever thought about the pain he'd caused her? Had he ever imagined himself in her place, betrayed by the one who'd sworn her his love, and facing the death she'd spent so many years running from? I loved you, she yelled. Her voice cracked on those horrid words, but she kept going, unable to stop. I loved you, and you threw me away like some common whore! Her heart beat so fast she thought it would explode. He took a step backward as if he'd been shoved. You have to listen to me, Andy, Dex begged. His dark eyes were wide, his tattooed arms held out, hands pressed pleadingly together before him. She hated how handsome he was. Hated the curve of his jaw, the brown of his eyes, the way the starlight spilled across him like a lover's caress. She could scarcely stand to look at him. I don't have to do anything, Andy growled. She didn't feel the cool trickle of tears trailing from her eyes, didn't know there were any tears left to cry until she tasted the saltiness on her lips. She sucked a breath through her gritted teeth. She felt her fists clench, felt the weight of her cuffs begging to swing, to give in to the anger, to sink into that darkness she'd been swallowed by years ago. But as much as she wanted to swing at him, she knew her fists weren't in control of this fight. Her words were. She wanted him to hurt, to feel the soul-deep pain just as she did. Physical wounds would heal, but the internal scars never would. "Do you not understand?" Andy cried out. He looked broken, his constellation tattoos like cracks across his skin. She wanted to shatter him from the inside out. You were my whole world. You showed me that I could still be loved. When everyone else, an entire planet full of people, hated me so much they wished me dead, even my own parents, I found you. I started to live again. I started to trust. Then I lost you too, just like all the others. You turned away, just like they did. She didn't care that the tears were now flowing freely, spilling across her metal cheekbones to splatter at her feet. They had been pent up for too long. They needed to be released. You were a coward, a pathetic, crev-hungry coward. You failed me when you were the only person I thought never would. Her words echoed in the space. For a second, she thought he would turn and leave, too cowardly to listen. Then Dex crossed the room in three strides, so close to her that she could feel his breath on her face. I turned you in because you were running from the law. You lied to me about your past, Andy. I did nothing that wasn't expected of me. My duty as a guardian was to the welfare of the galaxy, not to some runaway specter who'd failed her entire planet. You made the choice to fly that transport ship. It was your hands that crashed it, your failure that killed Kaylee. You ran, Androma. He laughed then, a short bark that exploded from his chest. And now look what you've become, the bloody Baroness. You made me this way, Andy snarled. I became a monster of your creation. I killed, and I liked it, and you liked it too. All those deaths across the galaxy have your name on them, just as much as mine. You're blaming me for the murders you've committed? He laughed in her face. You're amazing when you fight, Androma, she said, throwing his past words back at him. You're unstoppable. Every time you saw me take someone down, every job I helped you with, you looked at me with pride, with love. They circled each other like predators, blood boiling, bodies shaking with rage as the stars looked on. Did you ever think about my side in all of this, Androma? Dex's voice cracked suddenly as he ran his fingers through his dark hair. You may think you know the whole story, but you are so consumed by hate that you only see yourself. She ran her palm over her face, feeling the chill of her metal cheekbones as she wiped away the tears. You are such a hypocrite. Did you ever ask for my side of the story? He paused, then said, Your side of the story doesn't matter. You sunk a knife into my chest. You stole my ship and left me to die. And I'd do it again, 1,000 times, Andy growled, stepping closer until they were practically touching, until their furious hearts beat as one. She saw tears in his eyes now as well, felt his chest rise and fall as sobs overcame him. You are the only woman I have ever loved, he whispered. He stepped away, and the space between them felt as distant as the black sky outside. If you loved me, why did you betray me? Andy asked in a whisper. Dex released a breath. His voice was softer now when he spoke. There is more to the story than what you think, if you would just listen to me. She shook her head. Not tonight, Dex. If not tonight, then when? He was so stubborn, it made Andy want to scream. I've heard enough! He rushed toward her again, grabbed her hands in his and squeezed them tight, forced her to look up at him. I didn't have a choice. When I found out you were a wanted fugitive, I felt like a fool for not realizing it earlier. The way you could fight, the burns on your wrists, how could I not have seen it after the general had blasted your name across the feeds? God's stars, Andy, only a few days had passed when I discovered who you really were, and you'd already wiggled your way into my heart. I was in shock. I knew I had to turn you in, but I let time go by. I let myself love you, protect you, help you rediscover the strength I always knew you had. And yet you still turned me in, she said. They had my father. He barked out the words in one breath. His eyes were wide, like he couldn't believe he'd actually said them. Dex had never spoken about his family before, and she'd never pushed the subject, just as he'd never pushed her for details about her own past. The Arcardian patrolman took him hostage. The general... All who were loyal to him, they were so furious when you escaped Arcardius before your death sentence could be carried out. I was approached by some of his men. They said that if I didn't lead them to you, my father would be killed. He was just a mechanic, an innocent man. He hadn't killed like you had. He hadn't... Dex took a deep breath. They gave me a choice, Andy. I could turn in the woman I loved, whom I'd only spent a year of my life with... or I could watch the man who raised me die at their hands. Andy didn't know what to think, what to believe. Dex wiped tears from his cheeks as he sunk to his knees before her, broken. Dextro Arez was finally, finally broken. She saw it as plain as day before her, a victory she'd imagined in her heart for years. So why didn't it feel good? When they told me exactly what you had done to Kaylee, not only allowing your charge to die on your watch, but the fact that you'd caused it, a part of me, the guardian part, wanted to turn you in so you could face the traitor's punishment you deserved. He looked down at his hands. But the other part, my heart, Androma, told me that you were only a girl when it happened. A soldier, yes, but so young, with so much responsibility. It was a mistake. No matter how strong the person, everyone makes mistakes. I tried to warn you so you would at least have a head start. When I left that morning, Andy, don't you remember my words? She racked her brain, searching, and there it was. Dex leaning against the doorframe. He'd been ill all morning, puking up his guts in the sick bay. He got dressed slowly and came to sit beside her on the cot, watching her with sadness in his eyes. You know you always have to be on the lookout when I'm gone, he said. You know you're never truly safe in this galaxy. The Marauder is my home, Dex, Andy said. I'm perfectly safe when I'm here. He sighed. I'd feel better if you kept a weapon on you at all times. He glanced beneath the cot. Your sash of knives is freshly sharpened. She'd laughed then and told him he was worrying for no reason. Told him she'd be fine until he came back, that she knew how to take care of herself. She thought he was just talking nonsense, that he was exhausted and worried for her because the job he was embarking on would be a longer one than usual. I pleaded with them, Dex said now. I begged them to understand that you had made a mistake. You could never return to your home, and wasn't that enough of a punishment? But they wouldn't listen. They just wanted you, Androma. They wanted General Cortaz to have justice. They offered me money and a position as a leading guardian for Arcadius. They also said they would let my father go. If you had been there, Andy... He looked down at his boots. If you had seen the fear on my father's face in the video they showed me of him, captive and bound in chains, if it were one of your marauders, and if it were my life or theirs on the line, you would know why I did it. He looked up at her now, his eyes pleading, the emotion so raw on his handsome face. I'm so sorry, Androma, Dex whispered. I will never forgive myself for what I did to you. His shoulders slumped. In her mind, she saw that final fleeting moment on the fire moon, the knife in his chest, his shirt blossoming green with his blood. She felt the pain of her heart breaking in her chest, the feeling that she could hardly breathe. Andy, Dex whispered, please look at me. Tell me we can move past this. We both made mistakes. We both made our choices, and we've had to live with them. She turned away from him, unable to look at his face. We can't ever go back to how it was before, Dex said. But if you're willing, we could make something new. She didn't look at him as she said, just go, Dex. Her voice cracked on his name. He slipped past her silently and left her room without another word. She settled down on the floor again. There, alone in her quarters, she picked up her swords and added more tallies, the blades turning slick with the flow of her tears.
Chapter 37 Claren, Year 25
Let me go, the queen whispered. Cyprian, please.
In the darkness of her private chambers, lit only by the moonlight, all she could see was the general's ghostly outline as he stood before her, pressing her up against the wall. His ruffled shirt was half undone. His blue eyes looked like flames trying desperately not to flicker out. His hands, curled into fists, were tangled in her hair, wrapped around her throat as he pressed her harder against the wall.
I will kill you, he growled. You have done something to me.
His grip grew tighter. She could hardly breathe. Her vision grew dim. For a moment, panic called her name.
Let me go!
She choked out the words, fighting for air. Even in her hatred, she made herself reach out and touch him. With trembling hands, she ran her fingers down his back, felt the shudder race up and down his spine. She dug her fingertips in, pressing so hard she drew blood.
Let me go! Damn it, Claren!
His entire body shook as he finally released her.
Damn you!
He stumbled backward. She slipped down the wall, gasping for air. Tears streamed down her cheeks. Cyprian was strong, stronger than she'd ever anticipated. She hated this fight, hated the lack of control. The queen looked up, meeting his gaze as he stood across from her, hunched over.
What are you doing to me?
He asked, his hands outspread before him as if he were afraid of them, afraid of himself.
Every night, I find myself here. You plague my dreams. You come to me in visions. Your name forces itself to my lips when I wake.
He ran a hand across his creased face.
When I am with my wife, I think of you.
2 years she'd waited for this. A queen away from her planet, a prisoner deep in the belly of the Cortaz lair. 2 years she'd endured questions from his men, allowed herself to be removed from her quarters and forced to sit in front of a camera, to record videos that were sent across the galaxy to her husband.
"Tell him to surrender, Claren," Cyprian had said. "Tell him to surrender, and you can go free."
"Do not surrender," she'd responded into the camera, using her eyes and her voice as she'd been taught, knowing her husband would obey her demands. "Do not give in. You can still win this war, my love." The unified systems continued to blast Zenterra with bombs, spreading more death. And so the war had carried on.
"Tell me!"
Cyprian screamed now in her room. He ran his hands through his thinning hair. The war had changed him, turned him into something fractured.
"Tell me what you've done to me!"
The obsession had spread. She could sense it in him, like a disease that festered. Even now, as he sank to his knees before her, tears welling in his eyes, he couldn't look away. She may have been his prisoner, but he was her toy, a wad of putty to mold and shape to her own liking. It was time. Time to make her next move. All her life she'd waited for this moment, and so it was with a smile that Claren looked up, stared into his eyes, and whispered, "It is because you love me." He froze. He glared at her, still 3 steps away as he got to his feet.
"What did you just say to me?"
The queen swallowed and gathered strength from deep within. She was born to do this, born to sacrifice herself, her heart to the king of Zenterra. Her daughter, unplanned, had been sacrificed too. Now she was willing to give up her body to the cause. "You love me, Cyprian," the queen said, stronger now, as something powerful surged through her. She rose to her feet, using the wall for support, and stepped closer to him. "All these years you have watched me. You have longed to touch me, to taste me, to make me yours." Her words were poison. She, the tipped arrow, aimed for the kill. "You will take me as your lover," the queen whispered, "and you will come to me night after night, until you can no longer look upon your wife without wishing to replace her." Her captor glared at her, trembling with a rage that he had been so desperately trying to hide these past 2 years. Tonight she would win.
"I love you,"
he said through gritted teeth. A question still. She must try harder. "You love me, Cyprian Cortaz," she whispered, putting everything she had into her words, stepping forward until her breath was on his lips, until her chest pressed against his and she grasped his hands, guiding them around to the lowest part of her back. "You love me, and you will make me yours tonight."
"I love you,"
he whispered.
"Again," she said. "Say it again."
His eyes met hers.
"I love you, Claren."
She took his hands, lifted them to the front ties of her thin gown.
"Then show me."
A growl rumbled from his lips as he pressed himself against her.
"I love you,"
he said again. This time she knew it had worked. He meant it. They spent the rest of the night together, tangled in the sheets, tangled in her lies.
Chapter 38. Androma. "It's a masterpiece, really," Gilly said as she sat with her chin resting on her folded hands, examining Valin's lacerated back. "A masterpiece if you're someone like Soyina," Lyra said. We'll likely never see her again, especially if Nor catches wind of her helping us. Soyina enjoys delivering pain, Gilly commented from across the med table. Right, Andy? What? Andy looked up to see the two girls watching her. Still considering whether or not to kill Dextro? Lyra asked. The girls apparently had heard the entire explosive fight go down. Andy's and Dex's screams could be heard echoing through the halls of the ship. They had found Andy afterward when she'd emerged from her quarters. The tears had dried, and the girls spent time sitting with her in silence. No music, no laughter, just a few moments of quiet that allowed her mind to reset. Now, a few hours later, her mood had improved. Her thoughts were still muddled, her emotions were still raw, but her body felt strangely lighter, as if hearing the truth from Dex, whether she had wanted to or not, had lifted a weight from her shoulders that she'd carried for years. I don't want to talk about it, Andy said with a heavy sigh. Lyra watched her closely. Later, she said. Otherwise, it will consume you. Andy nodded, knowing Lyra, as always, was right. She leaned back in her chair, wincing as the pain in her chest flared up. That damned stunner! Lyra practically growled beside her. The next job you go on will be with us watching your back. She sighed and ran a hand across her hairless head. If I ever see that revivalist again, I will personally deliver my own special dose of pain, and we'll see how she enjoys it. Andy smiled, despite the ache still pulsing in her chest. I don't doubt that you will. Did she really shoot you? Gilly asked. Dex, too? Andy nodded, and the gunner's eyes widened. I can't believe I didn't get to meet her. Can she really bring people back to life? Andy shrugged. She claims she's capable of that. The med bay door slid open with a cool hiss, and Breck stomped in. Ladies, she said impatiently, tucking her hair behind her ears. I'm not interested in dining alone with Dextro tonight. We have a ship stocked with actual edible food since taking on this job. Come enjoy it with us. Gilly and Lyra stood from their places on either side of Valin, but Andy stayed put, unwilling to move. She'd helped Alfie clean his wounds, the blood-soaked rags now piled high in the corner of the small white room. Vials of his blood, freshly drawn by Alfie, were sitting in a testing box beside the rags. The AI wanted to ensure Valin hadn't picked up any diseases or been injected with any strange pathogens during his time in Lunamare. Valin's back looked cleaner, but by no means was it in better shape. It made her ache just to look at it, imagining the lash of the electric whips that caused it, ripping and shredding and burning. Andy? Lyra's voice drew Andy's attention back to her crew. She looked away from Valin to smile softly at the three of them. Gilly was standing on tiptoe, still trying her best to get a good look at Valin's wounds. Andy waved a hand, which, she noted, was still covered in remnants of the battle waged in Lunamare. Go on without me. I'm going to stay. Someone should be here with him when he wakes. Breck shrugged and pulled Gilly along with her, but Lyra stopped for a moment. There's a fissure in you. I can sense it even from here. Lyra loosed a gentle sigh before explaining her words, but when she did, they sunk like a rock into Andy's gut. Sooner or later, you're going to have to choose between forgiveness or hate, and you and I both know which one is harder to live with. She didn't wait for Andy to answer. She simply turned, graceful as a bird, and left the room. Andy waited by Valin's side all night, unsure of why she stayed. Unsure of why she couldn't look away from the lashes on his back that crisscrossed his skin like ribbons, or the bruises blooming across his pale skin like paint. Valin Cortaz had never been Andy's favorite person. She'd hardly known him in her old life. He'd been strange and silent and always seemed to be watching with eyes a little too interested in keeping track of her. But he was a Cortaz. He was a piece of Kaylee. And seeing him here reminded Andy of what could have been. Not if she'd stayed and faced the punishment of her trial, but before all of that, before the night that changed everything, If she hadn't taken the throttle of the transport ship in her hands, or gunned the engine a little too hard, or looked away for too long to laugh at what Kaylee had said, she could still remember the exact moment of impact. The horrible, mind-melting screech of metal against rock. She could still remember those few strange, weightless seconds in between the stolen ship's engine cutting off and the transport wing clipping the side of a floating mountain, the crash as the ship hit the ground, the hot flames of the burning engine, and the sound of Kaylee gasping for life, sticky wet blood dripping onto Andy's hands as she pressed and pressed and tried like hell to staunch the flow. "It hurts," Kaylee had whispered. But the words came out all wrong. The voice wasn't hers, and the rattling cough that followed made her lips too red as blood trickled from them and her eyes closed. Andy stood up. This was a mission like any other. Even if it was Valencourtaz, she owed him nothing, not her life or her emotions or the time she could have been spending now, sharing a meal and stories of Lunamare with her crew. She paced, focusing instead on the pain in her muscles, the screaming knife wound in her shoulder that she still hadn't allowed Alfie to patch up. Pain was her anchor. It was the only true thing in life that never lied or cheated. Best of all, if she tried hard enough, she could usually overcome it. She wanted to believe Lyra was wrong, but Andy knew there were fissures in her soul. She had always thought herself to be a wall as solid as the glass that made up the Marauder. She was the captain. She would not bend, and she sure as hell would never break. But today, she had broken, and now she had to find a way to put the pieces back together. She was just preparing to leave, to force herself away from Valen's sleeping form, when a flicker of movement caught her eye. His steady breathing had quickened, the burns and scars on his back seeming to squirm with each fast breath. His head was turned to face her, and his cracked lips fluttered like he was trying to form words. Andy stepped back to his side, wondering whether she should call on Alfie, but the AI was currently charging back up, plugged into the ship's dash a floor above. "Valen?" Andy asked. Her voice was a weak whisper. She hated the sound of it. She almost reached out to touch him when a beep sounded out from the testing box behind her. Andy turned, brow knitting. The small screen on the silver box flashed with an update. "Abnormal reading. Seek further tests." Alfie had been right. She wasn't entirely surprised, judging by the conditions inside Lunamare. She turned back to look at Valen, wondering what lurked beneath the surface of his skin. His breathing had quickened again. His hands, which had been lying still at his sides, began to curl into fists. "Valen, you're safe," Andy said, feeling like a fool with each word she spoke, unsure of whether he could even hear her. "You're not in Lunamare anymore. We're taking you back to your father. Back to..." His eyes flew open and locked on hers. "Valen?" Andy asked. One moment he was stone still. The next, Valen's hand shot out, ice-cold fingertips gripping the stained fabric of Andy's bodysuit. She backed away, but he pulled with a strength he hadn't possessed before, keeping her in place. He tugged her closer, hazel eyes wide and haunted. His voice was raw and ragged as a demon's when he choked out two harsh words. "Kill me." Chapter 39. Androma.
"So you're saying our cargo is a mutant?" A shirtless Dex lounged like a lazy cat on the floor of the main deck of the Marauder, his lithe muscles out on display. His legs were draped over the edge of the couch Andy was sitting on, and beside him Gilly sat cross-legged, focused intently on painting his fingernails red.
"Stop moving," Gilly commanded. "You'll smudge it."
Dex chuckled and promptly stilled his hands. Seeming pleased, Gilly hefted the tiny nail brush like a weapon, whistling softly as she painted away. The soles of Dex's filthy boots grazed Andy's thigh as he shifted. She swatted them away and threw him an icy glare. Apparently, her youngest gunner had fully succumbed to Dex's charms, but Andy wasn't ready to let go of the past just yet.
Everyone, in fact, was acting far too normal around him as they enjoyed this rare time of relaxation while the ship was on autopilot toward Arcadius. "Valin is no different than us," Andy said to Dex, "and he's not a mutant. And put on a damned shirt. This is a spaceship, not a pleasure palace." "It used to be both." He waggled his eyebrows at her, then winced as Andy ripped off one of his boots and launched it at his face. Gilly cursed as Dex smudged her handiwork yet again. When Andy first got her hands on the ship, the main deck could only have been described as a man cave. Sagging, stolen couches with empty grist bottles, dirty boots and socks strewn about, a scattered game of fleet cards from whomever Dex had invited onto his ship and screwed over in days past. Since then, it had been transformed. It was comfortable and classy. Almost all of the furniture Dex had owned had been thrown out and replaced by genuine adherent cowhide couches, purchased after the girls took on their first few well-paying jobs. Gone were Dex's old messes, and in their place was a bright, airy room that was the most well-used part of the Marauder, save for the bridge. Classical music played softly on the ship's overhead speakers, the deep swell of stringed instruments serenading the crew as they sat together. It was Andy's favorite music, the kind that didn't need words to speak to a person's soul. It was one of the only things she'd brought with her from her past. The ship was much better now that she and the girls had placed their mark on it. "Looks beautiful," Dex said, as he looked at his freshly painted nails. "This is definitely my color, kid." Gilly grinned proudly. But Andy seethed. He'd stolen her youngest gunner's heart. Now he'd stolen her trademark red polish, too. "I disagree," Andy said, as she leaned forward and swiped the bottle from Gilly's hands. "I think black, like his soul, is the better shade. Wouldn't you agree, Gilly?" The girl only shrugged, then leaped up from the couch and joined Breck and Lyra at the Viridium table nearby. The table was shaped like a large oval and was currently stocked with Gilly's and Breck's tools for creating their own sparks. They sat there now, mulling over their latest creation. Beside them, a metal cabinet was fastened to the wall, which held all of the girls' playthings, and Lyra's stash of chew, which Andy not so secretly wanted to blast out the airlock. Across from the lounge area was the small kitchen. No more than 2 burners, a rusted sink that needed replacing, a few lockable metal cabinets for food stores, and a cooling box for fresh ingredients. Alfie stood over the ladder now, digging through its contents, wearing a Kiss the Cook apron that somehow looked strangely fitting on his metallic frame. For the past hour, he'd been cataloging their food stores as they waited for Memory to finish her own secondary diagnostic on Valin's blood. Every so often, he'd glide over to the crew to spout out the exact nutritional value of each item, then proceed to define each word he'd just said as he dodged the various things Breck threw at him in response. "So," Dex said, nudging Andy with his bare foot. "Who's in favor of calling the cargo a mutant?" "Dex?" Andy glowered at him. "Would you do me the favor of removing your head from your neck?" From the chair opposite them, Breck cleared her throat. "I don't want to get in the middle of this little battle." She said it like a question, waving her hand as if swatting away a blood bug. "But unfortunately, I agree with the bounty hunter on this one." "Traitor," Andy muttered. "Apologies," Breck said back. "But you saw the test results. Abnormal blood, Andy. After spending how many years inside of Lunamare, they probably royally screwed with him in there and caused the abnormality." She paused, cocking her head and seeming to reconsider her answer. "Actually, that seems more likely than his just being a mutant." Dex groaned as the single person who had been in agreement with him switched sides. Lyra and Gilly, seated beside Breck, were busy looking over a new set of exploding sparks Gilly had manufactured herself. The kid had talent, Andy had to admit, though sometimes Gilly's passion for destruction unnerved her. She reminded Andy a little too much of herself. "What do you two think?" Andy asked. Lyra turned one of the sparks over in her blue hands, scrutinizing it. "I think we should wait for Memory's further test results to come in before we jump to any illogical conclusions." "Aha!" Alfie's head emerged from the cooling unit, frost covering the tip of his oval chin. "I have discovered the source of the smell." He held up a dripping hunk of green meat, then proceeded to march over to the small ejection site and blast it out into space. The full diagnostic results from memory will be complete at any moment, Lyra Matee. Until then, can I comfort you with a mind-numbing beverage of your choice? Lyra ignored Alfie, tapping a space inside the small metal orb and inclining her head to Gilly. Right here, little one. It needs to have more of a reaction. Add more powder. Gilly twisted her mouth to the side and thought. My opinion on Valen is that he's a mutant, she said, flashing Andy a grin before she turned back to the spark in progress. Definitely a mutant.
Ha! Dex clapped his hands triumphantly. Andy sighed and kicked her feet up on the table. My crew are losing their minds.
We're not losing anything, just gaining imagination, Breck said. It makes life a little more interesting.
As if we need any more of that, Andy responded under her breath, just as Alfie walked over to the table in front of her, swiftly removed her feet from it and tapped on the screen embedded in the top. Once it lit up, he typed in a number of codes.
So? Dex asked, wiggling the toes on his exposed foot. Andy was so close to making him lose a toe or two, or 10.
What do we have, Alfie?
The tests are providing inconclusive results. I am not certain what to make of this outcome, Alfie said.
Well, that wasn't something you heard every day from a highly advanced AI, especially with memories programming to supplement Alfie's systems and knowledge base.
I will arrange for the great General Cortaz's personal medical team to run more extensive tests on him.
We do not have what we need aboard the Marauder, he glanced up. That is not to say, my beautiful memory, that you have not done well.
Did he just call our ship's system beautiful? Breck asked. Alfie continued on with his explanation.
All I can determine is that Mr. Valen Cortaz's DNA seems to have changed.
What, like he changed blood type or something? Andy asked. Alfie continued to scroll through a series of coded numbers and symbols.
It is not possible to switch blood types, Androma Rosella. I believe that a pathogen is the source of the DNA alteration, though it is not one currently listed in any Mirabelle records. He tapped the screen again. An anomaly, perhaps. I will continue to screen for further results. Until then, I must alert General Cortaz.
Andy nodded her head, wishing they had more answers, wondering what the Zentarans had done to Valen in Lunamare and to all the other prisoners locked behind bars. Her skin crawled just thinking of it. It seemed to be a good enough explanation for Gilly. She jumped to her feet, nearly knocking a spark over and letting out a devilish cackle.
Mutant! I was right!
Her freckled face was so full of excitement, truly showing her young, vivid spirit. It made Andy's heart warm, seeing the proof that Gilly, contrary to popular belief, still had a soul, tainted as it may be.
Maybe you are. Only time will tell, Gil,
Breck said from her chair, a smile softening her face.
I will excuse myself now, Alfie said, removing the apron and hanging it back up on the hook by the kitchen sink. I have further things to attend to.
As he left the main deck, Andy looked around at her team. It was still shocking that the lot of them had accomplished a mission where the odds were so stacked against them. The worst was behind them, left to rot in Lunamare. Just another memory to lock inside her head so that she could move forward with the next job, the next payday. That was, of course, if General Cortaz kept his word and didn't choose to damn them to the pits of Tenebris instead, which were supposed to rival the horrific conditions of Lunamare. Even with questions about Valen still floating in her head, and the truth of Dex's story still sinking in, Andy was somehow able to relax back into the couch. The music had changed to one of her favorite songs, The Song of the Snow, an almost mournful piece by a Solaran composer who'd been inspired by the bleak, unceasing winters on the ice planet. As Andy closed her eyes and listened, she finally felt at peace again in the presence of her crew, on the ship she loved so dearly. Sleep began to whisper her name.
Who wants to play Shadow Chase? Gilly asked.
So much for closing her eyes for a moment. Andy sat forward, yawning. Breck groaned, but Lyra leaped up, excited to join in another one of Gilly's favorite games.
I'll play, Dex said, if you're prepared to lose horribly.
Gilly doesn't lose this one, Breck said. Ever.
It's true, Andy said. She'll poison your drink with laxatives the moment you take the lead.
Breck muttered something about bad experiences in the background.
Dex howled with laughter. Andy smiled back, the response instinctive and easy. Before she could consider how she felt about that, the ship rumbled beneath her feet. Once. Twice. Then a horrible lurch threw her from the couch. The lights winked off, quickly replaced by the deep blood red of the emergency systems kicking on.
What the hell?
Dex yelped as he scrambled to his feet. The room felt like it was falling sideways, as if the Marauder was tipping. Memory's voice came on overhead.
Alert! Systems crashing! Alert!
Chapter 40 Nor. All her life, Nor had known the pain of the cataclysm. She was only an infant when it began, only 11 years old when it ended. A child turned into an orphan queen overnight. She'd seen things no one should ever have to see. Burning bodies falling from the sky as her family's palace was struck by the debris from hundreds of destroyed ships. Screams rising from the smoke as soldiers from the unified systems tore through the streets of Nivea, razing it apart until they broke through the doors of the Solis Palace. Nor had been only 5 years old when she heard her mother's scream ring out through the palace in the dead of night. The night she was taken from them, stolen by General Cyprian Cortas of Arcadius. For 6 years she'd felt the emptiness of her mother's absence, the depression when her father, a king with a lost queen, tried in vain to rule in the midst of losing a war. On the darkest, coldest nights after her mother was kidnapped, Nor used to lie in the bunker of the palace and imagine the face of the Arcadian general. She would imagine the pain she'd someday inflict on him, the deep chasm she'd rip through his heart when she stole everything he'd ever loved. It was with great pleasure that she allowed her torturers to harm his son Valen. For a while, she'd felt that desire for revenge slowly ease. But since the general's son had escaped, Nor felt empty all over again. Alone, just as she'd felt after the Battle of Black Sky, when Nor's father had left her too, crushed to death in the rubble. It was Zahn who had pulled Nor from the ashes of the palace. He'd taken her to Darai, who had raised her to take up her throne and become a mighty, relentless queen. He filled her brain with the desire to lead, not just with her head, but with her entire heart, body and blood, a head raised high, an iron fist intent on crushing their enemies. But now, 15 years after the fighting had ceased, despite everything she had done, Nor was out of options. Or rather, she thought, as her eyes adjusted to the dim hallways of the Lunamere prison, the best option has only just been revealed. The click of her heels and the steps of Zahn beside her were the only source of noise in the corridor. Darai, who was following them, had a way of slinking silently in the shadows. Not even a whisper of his cloak brushing the ground was noticeable. Sometimes Nor thought of him as a shadow himself, quiet and hidden. They passed a series of closed doors before walking into the observation room. A glass window separated the three of them from the 5 prisoners cuffed to chairs inside. "Queen Nor, it is a pleasure to see you again," Ecclesia said. Her 2 heads each grinned at Nor, bowing slightly as the queen stopped and pulled her cloak tighter around her shoulders against the chill of the prison. "We are very pleased with the latest batch of Zenith," her lead scientist continued. "The test subject's death was actually quite fortuitous. It showed us an unstable property in the weapon that was previously undetectable." "How did she die?" Nor asked. Ecclesia's left head smiled. "Painfully." "Quite a mess," the right head agreed. "But we are happy to say that we think we have finally perfected the solution." Nor, stone-faced, nodded once. The right head continued. We have handpicked these prisoners to be the first participants in this study. It will be interesting to see if there are any further side effects. The left head nodded in earnest. We are very confident that this new sample will meet your expectations. If all goes well, this will be the final batch. Ecclesia rubbed her hands together, both heads in agreement. This was reassuring to Nor, as Ecclesia's two heads were often at odds with each other. As she opened her mouth to order the testing to begin, however, a wad of discolored spit landed on the window in front of her. "Snav!" one of the prisoners growled at her. Nor ignored the slight. She had been called worse names before. Such insults stopped bothering her a long time ago. Zahn, however, took a step toward the door that led to the adjoining room, a deadly look on his face. Nor held up a hand to stop him. "Enough!" Zahn froze, but his eyes were molten with rage. "He has no right to call you such a name," he said under his breath, but a sharp look from Nor silenced any further commentary. She turned to the window, her gaze falling on the prisoner who'd forgotten the meaning of fealty. "Ecclesia, begin the testing with that one," she paused, a thought occurring to her. "Can the weapon be activated on any part of the body?" "Yes, it can be," the right head said. The left smiled. "As long as it makes contact with living flesh and can enter the bloodstream, the fun can begin." Nor tilted her head, pinning the prisoner with her gaze. "Then we should have a little fun, Ecclesia. Let's see how painful it is when placed in the eyes." She watched as the prisoner's mutinous expression transformed to one of fear, his body trembling as Ecclesia and two guards moved into the room where he sat. "Stop! No, stop!" His voice was frantic, and his hatred toward her morphed into a plea for mercy. "Please, I'll do anything!" He kept yelling as the guards held his squirming body still, and a metal instrument was placed on his eyes to hold them open. "The lively ones truly are the most captivating," Ecclesia's left head said. Nor watched with equal amounts of amusement and fascination as the glowing silver liquid dripped from the vial, slowly inching its way toward the prisoner's eyes. The silver liquid was an art form of its own, one that had the ability to enthrall a person or terrify them, depending on how strong their will was. As it made contact with his right eye, Ecclesia stepped back, the guards still restraining the man. Nor watched with curiosity as the silver bled into his iris like paint dropped into water. The prisoner, pleading forgotten, was back to yelling profanities at her, pain lacing his voice each time he spoke. Suddenly his screams cut off. He fell blessedly silent. The other four prisoners looked at their fellow inmate, then at Nor, bowing their heads to her. She wasn't a fool. Their sudden respect was just a facade to save themselves, but it was thrilling to see the power she now held over the people who had spent their entire lives despising her. Nor turned to Darai, and he gave her an approving nod. "Go on, my queen," Ecclesia's two heads spoke together. "Test him." Zahn held open the door, his hand lightly brushing Nor's as she walked past. He and Darai followed her inside, the guards behind them ready with hands on their guns. She stepped up to the prisoner. His gaze, once full of hate, was now awed. She stopped over him, glancing down her nose the way Darai had taught her, chin still held high. "Who do you follow?" she asked him. "You, my queen." He lowered his head in an attempt to bow, even with his hands tied. Nor watched as the other prisoners received their own doses of the liquid on their forearms. She saw again the way it slipped through their skin, leaving no trace of evidence behind. Nor waited a moment before asking all of them her most vital questions. Will you fight for me? Die for me? Bow down to me? Yes, my queen, the five responded in unison. Nor let out a breath. Her dream, her mission in life, was on its way to becoming a reality. The weapon was complete, a success fully capable of changing the future of her planet and that of the entire galaxy.